Let's welcome Adam Montree for his presentation.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. Happy to be here. Our youngest daughter was born the fall, the last time the conference was here, so we weren't able to make it. So we're happy to have brought her and her older sister back and been able to come as well. So real quick before we hop in, I think it's important. I know we have regional descriptions of what we call things. So for us in Michigan, hoop houses and high tunnels are used interchangeably. We can have that debate all day long if we want, but just so for the purpose of this, when we say hoop house, that's what we're talking about. We're going to talk about our program called Hoop Houses for Health. It's a partnership between the Department of Horticulture, Michigan State, the Michigan State University Center for Regional Food Systems, and the Michigan Farmers Market Association, which is a nonprofit housed on campus that's affiliated with our Community Sustainability Department. So there's two main objectives in this Kellogg Foundation-funded project. One is to build season extension capacity and infrastructure for Michigan farmers, and the other is to increase access to healthy foods for vulnerable families and their children. Since it's a Kellogg-funded project, you know, Kellogg's target is those vulnerable families with children aged 0 to 5. That also includes, for this project, children 0 to 8 years old. So the nitty-gritty, how does it work? Kellogg gives us some money, and then we've got this program where farmers apply. We work with them through the application process. They get quotes. We have a fairly straightforward 2 to 3 page application process, again, that we work with them to get through. A lot of it asks about where they're selling, their experience accepting food assistance benefits outside of Hoop Houses for Health, so SNAP, Double Up, EBT, and similar programs, WIC, Project Fresh. So once they apply, MIFMA, which is the Farmers Market Association, works with community partners, mostly Head Start agencies, but it's expanded to Head Start agencies, Great Start agencies, YMCAs, Community Action Network agencies, and those types of organizations that are embedded in the communities that we partner with, and that have direct access to these families, and already have established relationships. So MIFMA works with them. Families then come to those agencies. They receive vouchers at around $16 per person, per family, per month. And then they take those vouchers and they take them to the farmers market and they spend them like cash. In some of the markets that we're working in, we've started to transition over to an electronic card, which everyone likes a lot more. You know, families have a card similar to how we switched over in the SNAP program. You know, there's not vouchers. We don't have to count vouchers. Farmers don't have to count vouchers. We can reload cards on site and that type of thing. And then the way that the farmers pay off their loan is that they submit those vouchers and or receipts in terms of farm to school. So if it's a market sale, they submit those vouchers or we have it electronically. And then if it's a farm to school sale, the way they have it is they create invoices. Those invoices are zeroed out, signed by the food service director, and then they submit those and that amount comes off of their loan. Right, so the quote-unquote loan information, the way it works, it's a 5-year payback. It's zero interest. So the farmers get that money up front. They have no interest that they're paying over that 5-year loan period. They set their own payback goals. The only thing that we have is they can't have more than 35% of that loan due in year 5. So they can front load it if they want. They can back load it if they want. It can be changed every year. We try to make this a really flexible program. So farmers can say, hey, they had a $10,000 loan and they started out at $2,000 every year. After year 1, they might say, hey, I want to change it to $3,000 for the next couple years and pay it off early, or I'd like to shift it to having a less loan payback or that. So it's really flexible, and again, that can be evaluated every year. These loans are up to $15,000. They don't have to take $15,000. It's up to that amount, and it covers 75% of the total project costs. So we ask that the farmers add 25% of their own funds in, just so that they have, you know, whether we call it skin in the game or some investment on their end as well. And that doesn't have to be for the hoop house or high tunnel specifically. It can be, say, for irrigation happening in there. It can be for compost. It can be seeds, fertilizers, a tiller that they're going to use in there, any of those types of things. We just ask that they put in, you know, a 25% of the loan. So what can these farmers sell, or what are eligible food items? So these are any food items grown or produced by the farms, by the farmers on their farms and or on rented property that they have signed contract to be farming on. Products do not have to come from the hoop house, so that's one of the biggest questions we get is, you know, it doesn't have to be only in there. Farmers can sell anything from their farm. And we do have work with some farmers who do value-added products. The only thing that we ask for this program is that 50% by weight of the ingredients were grown by the farm. And that, for us, we have a cottage food law in Michigan. I know not every state has that, so we're able to have jams and jellies, those types of things. So we just ask that the farmers say they don't have to be growing sugar beets and, you know, making sugar on their own, but if they're, say, doing strawberry jam, we'd ask that they be growing the strawberries or raspberries or blueberries or that, and that, that the items, you know, are 50% or more. Same thing, we work with some farms that sell baked goods. We do work with some that are growing and milling their own products. So if they're selling breads or like that type of thing, we just ask that it's 50%. So I'm going to be around the rest of the week. I'm happy to talk about other parts of this project. But for this purposes, we're going to focus on the kind of training and technical assistance aspects of it. So what are we doing? So we're doing a number of workshops and field days. These are always done on farms, on participating farms. So those are sometimes they're, you know, in hoop houses, which we really like. They include seeding, they include economics, they include marketing, they include open space for farmers in the programs to interact with each other. It includes information about how the program works. We definitely have farmers coming to these field days that are not part of the program. We welcome them. We welcome them if they have no intention of being part of the program. So what we're doing is using these funds that have been provided to us for technical assistance to not only reach farmers in the program, but also to work with farmers and interact with farmers outside of the program as well. We do 3 webinars each year. They're recorded and then available online. Again, they are not limited to farmers only in the program. These are the 6 that we've done so far. We have 6 more that are listed, and most of these topics come from brainstorms with farmers that are, again, in and out of the program. So we try to do things that'll help basic farmers that are just getting into season extension work, as well as ones that are lots of experience. So we're trying to not only have this, you know, this is what a hoop house is, this is how you use it, this is the idea behind it, but we also do some advanced ones that are, you know, really honing in on spacing, economics, variety and cultivar selection, and those types of things. We do a number of how-to videos. Most of these are very short clips that a farmer can run on their phone or out in the field or on their computer as well. This is just a sample of them. So with these, we're at about 8,000 views or so on these. When we add in our other ones, we're up good, you know, I think we're over 20,000 or so views. So obviously, it's not only farmers in this program that are using these. We also do hoop house training builds. Everyone knows that it's a lot easier to build things when you have people that are experienced building them. These are done as a way to get the tunnels built in the program, as well as for farmers to get experience and to ask questions and come together for, you know, 1 to 3 days. The big thing here is, again, is that we want the farmers to come together. We want them to be able to ask not only building questions but also production questions. And when we choose sites to build on that part of the program, we tend to choose the sites that are farmers that have self-identified as having a potentially difficult time getting these tunnels built. So we're not going to go somewhere where someone knows how to build them, they've got a number of them up, and they're just looking for some extra hands. We definitely choose ones usually that don't have tunnels at all, and that may not have access to tools or other people to help them. We do a number of one-on-one technical assistance, you know, site visits, phone calls, text messaging, emails, all hours of the day, all times of the year. You know, we love the calls. It's Saturday morning at 5 in the morning. I'm setting up at market. I've got this. What should I price it as? You know, so that's, we love working with farmers like that. We farm ourselves as well, so a lot of the questions that we get are, what are you charging for this? And then we can go back to that question, well, what are you charging for it? How are you figuring out your pricing? Those types of things. The kind of last piece that we're putting together, that we're in the process of doing right now, is this production and pricing guide. We're talking, you know, basically pages that will be electronic, as well as they'll be able to print them out PDF-wise. But there'll be crops, not all crops. We're not going to be doing broccoli. We're not going to be doing cauliflower. These are really specific to crops that farmers is part of this program and that we have experience with growing, crops that they're growing in the tunnels. Cultivar suggestions, not an all-encompassing list of cultivars. some production things like transplant age, in-row spacing, ranges, between row spacing, ranges. Again, we're not trying to say, do this. We're looking at what we've done on our farm, what other farms we've worked with in and out of this program are doing, and giving those ranges. You know, definitely there's farmers that are jamming things in really tight that have awesome soil in their tunnels that they've built over time. And so, you know, their in-row spacing and intensity of production may be different than, you know, farmers who haven't built that soil up in their tunnels yet. Expected yields per plant, direct marketing price ranges and wholesale price ranges, and packaging sizes. And those direct and wholesale price ranges are coming from farmers in this program, so we're using them. And I do see a number of familiar faces in the car, and you may be getting emails from me sometimes over this winter to review these to see if it would make sense for farmers that you work with as well. We have some evaluation work that we're doing. It's external. We're just starting to get our first exit interviews. Again, it's a 5-year program. This is the start of year 6. So that first round of farmers are starting to graduate out. So we're getting some feedback. And we're definitely seeing them that they're expanding into new markets, that they would all recommend this program to others, that most of them have extended their season and increased production, that they've expanded their customer base. They're at markets longer now, especially ones that didn't have tunnels. And that a number of them have found success selling at schools and early childhood programs. That was one of the goals of this program, is as farmers scale up, these school and hospital and early childhood programs are a way to kind of increase their markets. But a lot of times the schools are hesitant. So the schools have little investment here. They're not using any funds to purchase these products. So what we're seeing is once they have that relationship established and it wraps up, that they're then continuing that relationship. So the result is we get families access to fresh, healthy, Michigan-grown foods through a low-interest or zero-interest loan, and that farmers are able to pay them back using that instead of cash. So quick program snapshot. This is just for 2016. There's now, when we did this, there were 53 farmers. We're up at 60. 26 community partners. We had $818,000 in payback. Last year, 2016, we distributed almost $250,000 to farmers to build tunnels. When this program wraps up, this round of it, at the end of March 31st, 2018, there'll be about $850,000 that has gone out to farmers through these zero-interest loans, which then means $850,000 in produce that's been made available to families with vulnerable youth and children around the state. There's more information, depending on who you are and what you're looking for, available at hoophousesforhealth.org. And I'd like to thank our team. You know, Aaron Caudell and I work at MSU in the Center for Regional Food Systems and Department of Horticulture. Drew Montry and Rebecca Favor work at MIFMA, Michigan Farmers Market Association, and Colleen Matz is our school partner at the MSU Center for Regional Food Systems. All right. So the question is, how many tunnels are urban to peri-urban? I would say that probably, I mean, I'd have to go back and look at it, but I would say probably a quarter to a third. The markets that are selected, we're potentially are selecting for those areas, for farmers in those areas. The markets that we work with have to illustrate that they have high redemption rates of food assistance benefits. Basically, what we're trying to do is not find a market that, you know, has $2,000 or $100, say, of food assistance benefits coming in, and then set up 3 farmers there to pay back $10,000 in loans, and basically setting it up to not succeed. So we are definitely working with, I wouldn't say all large size urban farmers markets. There's definitely some rural markets, but they definitely need to illustrate that they have high redemption rates. So, and we've had farmers. The great thing, we've had farmers that are choosing to go to these 17 markets that would have never chosen to go to these markets otherwise. So those markets are expanding, as well as the, you know, farmers accessing other markets as well. Thank you.